Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's September the 12th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain. She's in Terre Haute, Indiana. Along the way, we'll check in with Fred Simon. He's an ag economist for the CME Group. It now owns the Chicago Board of Trade. We spoke to him earlier in the week about the disconnect between the cash markets and the futures contracts. Speaking of ag economists, we'll get Daryl Good's reaction to this morning's USDA crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimates. In fact, we'll start with that in a moment. And don't forget, too, that Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated will join us just after the bottom of this jam-packed half hour to discuss the agricultural weather forecast. It all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In Chicago on this September the 12th crop production report today, futures finished like this in the September contract for the wheat, 840. They were down 30 cents. December futures at 860.5, down 30 as well. That's the limit move. September corn futures at 339.75, gained 15 and a quarter. December futures at 356.5, were up 15 and a quarter. And the March contract up 15 and a quarter at $3.73. December futures for next year at 403.5 were 12 higher. September soybean futures for the day, $9.25. They were up 20 cents on the afternoon. November's 18 cents higher at 938.5. January's up 18 at 953.75. And November futures for next year at 924.5 gained 5.5 cents. Bean meal futures, September contract, 254.20, up $4.20. September bean oil at 38.87, up 0.99. October futures from the Mercantile Exchange live cattle pit, $94.72.5, down 97.5 cents. December futures were 60 cents lower at $99 even. Feeder cattle, September contract at the Merc, 116.85, down $1.67.5. October futures at 116.70 were down $1.62.5. October lean hogs, 65 cents lower at $65.20. Outside markets, crude oil trading the October at 79.80, up $1.57 a barrel. The CRB index gained 3.77 at 320.74. The dollar is down 0.31 at 79.36. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 13,324 for the day. That's up just about 14 points on the afternoon.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at AgriGold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you.
USDA is predicting the fall harvest will top 13.3 billion bushels of corn. That's an all-time record. The soybean crop is pegged at 2.619 billion bushels. University of Illinois Extension Ag economist Daryl Good went through the numbers after the release this morning and has this reaction.
I think there's a number of things that are important in the report. On the production side, of course, the big number was the increase in the size of the corn forecast. USDA added 3 bushels to their August forecast, now at 155.8 bushels per acre, which would be our second best ever, just behind 2004. So that's adding about 250 million bushels to the size of the crop, a little bit bigger than the average trade guess, but within the range of what the market was looking for. On soybeans, the market was, on average, looking for a slight increase in production, maybe 20, 25 million bushels, and that number basically was unchanged, just a smidgen lower. USDA tweaked the yield number down a tenth of a bushel and took about 20,000 acres out of the estimate for harvested acres of soybeans this year. So that was a little bit of a surprise on that side. On the demand side, I think couple of things. USDA very aggressive, I thought, on their forecast of feed use of grains for the year ahead. not only corn, but sorghum, and also soybean meal, jumping that number, partly explained by a smaller forecast for corn processed into ethanol, reducing distillers' grain production. But their basic justification was, if it's there, it'll get fed type thing. And I think the large feed grain crop suggests that we'll continue to see fairly large livestock production. And then on the export side, USDA did increase the forecast of corn exports for this marketing year by 100 million bushels, reflecting much tighter world feed grain supplies and a very fast start to our export program this year. On soybeans, really cut their projection of exports very dramatically by 45 million bushels. I think basically reflecting the fact that we don't have an excess supply to export this year. So it's more of an accounting number. What does it take to make it fit this year? Because soybean stocks are going to be very tight. And then finally, as anticipated by some, USDA did adjust their estimates and forecast of the amount of soybean oil used for biodiesel production, up that number substantially, and as a result, it really tightens up the soybean oil balance sheet for this current marketing year, and suggests that we're going to move from a pretty big surplus of soybean oil to relatively tight supplies there. So that's going to put, importance back on South American soybean acreage decisions.
That was University of Illinois Extension Ag Economist Darrell Good reviewing the September crop production and World Agricultural and Supply Demand Estimate reports. The U of I economist believes soybeans will stay strong and that corn, of course, will lag behind just a bit, but not necessarily moving dramatically lower in the face of a very large crop. Statistically speaking, he says a really big crop usually gets bigger. USDA will tell that tale in the October crop production report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now is Paul Cooley, as he always does, on a Wednesday afternoon to take a look at the futures markets and the report from USDA this morning. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Boy, what a wild and woolly day it was in Chicago when I talked to Darrell this morning. Futures didn't look like they did by the end of the day, certainly in the wheat pit. What'd you make of the trade there?
Okay, as far as the wheat's concerned, we did get the report that from early a.m. this morning. It was a little wetter forecast down the road, and several people confirmed that during the middle part of the session. Wow, it's an overbought market. We did get the feeling that people did... could we actually even consider an exhaustion or a major top here? Well, time will tell. But wheat's been a nervous market here and basically climbing probably to unbelievable levels. I guess the feeling is that a couple of keys, Todd, is that we are, you know, at $9 level. We are encouraging tremendous amount of new acreage being planted in the United States, at least. Argentina's in pretty good shape, and the only country that does need a drink of water is Australia, and it does look like they're chipping away at maybe that forecast. The trouble is that's maybe 10 days down the road.
On the corn side, USDA adds 250 million bushels to the bottom line. Wheat drops like a rock, and the corn managed to gain 15 and a quarter cents. So is that having to do anything with the wheat? Is it a buy corn,
of course,
sell
I
wheat?
Think, you know, there could have been some spreading, but the energy market went wild. The U.S. dollar went down in price considerably. You know, it does. It is. Whether it's a futures market and people in this new era of commodity trading adjust thoughts differently than we, you know, looked at the market 20 years ago about the crop getting larger. 250 bushel yield reports in about four different locations, you know, where pick up in Illinois. Also, the idea that the bidding for acres is an idea, but definitely the cost of corn production is expensive. The U.S. dollar was weaker. $80 crude oil.
Yeah.
All add up to a thing. The The other factor is it does it mean it's going to encourage more ethanol use? Well, the Congress needs to pass an energy bill for that to be basically implemented, and it's election year, and you know, nobody can outguess that one. I guess the bottom line is that the yields are good to excellent. We do anticipate some acreage reduction next year, and all that added up to a very fiery 15 cents up in the corn market with enormous yields, and that was probably the biggest surprise in the basket today.
Well, that was a big surprise in the basket. Can it be maintained, do you think?
I don't think so. The weather forecast is basically good. We are going to see an early frost in the northern parts of the growing area. My general impression is that with the slowing of ethanol demand and to some extent this enormous cost of transportation costs with these higher fuel levels, you know, the barge industry wants to do anything they can to raise prices and the cost of shipping, so, you know, I'm sure this will have another influence on it. We're going to have a big corn crop to carry into next year, and can we really bid those acres up in the February-March time frame enough to get corn to $4 on new crop is a million-dollar guess. I think we have a lot of corn to handle, and it's going to be an interesting thing to see how we put it to bed.
Anybody mention a 2 billion bushel carryover to you?
Well, we haven't heard that yet, but this 1650 that the USDA is talking about is a big one. You know, will we get this crop put to bed and the big size and get the actual yield verification is still an unknown. We're still early in the harvest, but the early indications are it's a big one, and we have to basically, I agree with the USDA's numbers at this time.
You agree with them on the soybeans at that
spot? Well, that's a good one. The bean seed size that we're seeing in the samples this afternoon indicate that it's probably one of the smallest seed size I've seen in 4 or 5 years. My opinion is that the bean crop could even be smaller, and as a result of that, I think you know, that's one reason why bidding for acres is one factor. I think the corn market went up. I think the bean market is very stout. Bean oil on biodiesel is a question mark at this time, but I think just the near sheer size, if you reduce the soybean crop a half a bushel to a bushel more, you have a very volatile situation on your hands called $10-plus beans.
What did you see in the numbers across the board? Anything that really jumped out at you that we didn't discuss yet?
Well, you know, one person mentioned China's crop being a million tons smaller. I think that's interesting. I think the other factor is that, you know, I didn't think we had to bid $9 for beans at harvest time, and I didn't think we'd be bidding like $3.25 for harvest corn or something like that. So, you know, these prices are pretty darn good, and a tip of the hat to the American farmer. He deserves every penny he can get.
Deserves every penny he can get. Does that mean you think he ought to be selling into this marketplace?
Well, he'll have, you know, I'll answer it with another question. You know, the farmers are going to look at the seed size, and if the yield monitor says the bean yields aren't going to come in, then, you know, they're going to be pretty strong holders of beans.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the corn's concerned, my opinion is that the $3.20 a bushel corn, or $3.15 to $3.30 times 200, is a pretty pretty good
hard to resist,
and so I think they'll reward the market, and the verdict is still out on the yield on whether he's going to reward the beans or not. But the right now the farmer feels that I think the bean yields are going to come in just a little lower than what the USDA indicated.
Okay, Paul, we appreciate you being with us today.
Have a profitable day.
You too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, and joins us here in the closing market report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. Our own Ed Kieser's forecast for the two-state region looks like this for tonight. It's short, clear, Lows between 42 and 50. Tomorrow, sunny. Highs will range from 77 in the north to 83 in the south. Tomorrow, wind speed 7 to 14 miles an hour. The minimum afternoon relative humidity will range between 30 and 40%. A cold front should pass through Illinois, says Ed, in Indiana on Friday. That'll touch off a few widely scattered showers. Coverage and amounts are not expected to be great. Dry and cooler weather following during the weekend. Morning lows will mostly be in the 40s on Saturday and Sunday. Warmer weather expected much of next week with high temps mostly in the 80s. Scattered showers will be possible from the middle of next week on. Generally favorable weather for crop maturation and harvesting expected through next week.
This is Les Schulte, Director of Corporate Support. WILL has made a significant commitment to providing area farmers and agribusiness professionals with the best information possible. But we need your support to help continue and grow this service. If you own or manage a business, consider supporting WILL through one of our business programs. Call 217-333-0850 for more information.
The futures markets have to be fixed from time to time. That's almost funny when you consider some view places like the Chicago Board of Trade as nothing more than a big betting room. A betting room or not, commodity exchanges are supposed to reflect the realities in the cash market when contracts expire. When that isn't happening, Fred Seaman steps in and tries to fix the problem. The associate director for the CME Group says it happened in the Chicago Board of Trade soft red winter wheat market last year.
Well, with wheat, actually, it would have been about a year ago, probably a little over a year ago. Started getting requests from our market participants to look at ways to improve the wheat futures contract. So we've conduct surveillance here in our department. We look at the performance of the contracts, and we called an industry meeting. And the timing for that was right after major news occurred as far as the Australian crop and the Argentine crop last fall. And we had lots of movement in the spreads and a very weak basis at the time.
Weak would be a mild term for the difference between the price of the expiring soft red winter wheat futures contract and the cash market. It caused many floor traders in Chicago to leave the floor for good. They suffered crushing financial losses. The floor traders are, for lack of a better term, the bettors, and they lost big time. Now, what they were betting on really wasn't, at the time, the price of soft red winter wheat, but rather a predicted world shortage of the crop that has since happened. Just not a year ago, and certainly not a year ago for the supply of soft red winter wheat. So what, you might say? They were betting and lost. Well, the so what has many avenues to pursue, but in this case, we'll take the one that goes down the road to the cash market. That's the place where the actual trade of soft red winter wheat happens. In this case, Toledo, Ohio. Again, the CME Group's Fred Seaman.
We had a situation where we had a world shortage of wheat because of problems in the southern hemisphere, but yet we had plentiful stocks of soft red winter wheat in the U.S. So that represented a weak basis. So the industry meeting was about how the futures contract can be more efficient in its delivery process to help the convergence between cash and futures, with futures being a world benchmark and cash being more localized.
There are two things of note in Fred Seaman's comments. Chicago wheat futures are played as a world market, but represent a local soft red winter wheat crop and convergence. A convergence means the futures price and the cash price should come together as the futures contract expires. It didn't in 2006, so the CBOT changed the specifications of the contracts.
So the main change to the wheat futures contract that will occur with the July 08 contracts forward is the movement from a warehouse receipt to a shipping certificate, which makes it easier for a regular warehouseman to deliver wheat on the futures contract because he doesn't have to have the wheat in store.
This puts the Chicago wheat contract in line with two other commodities traded on the CBOT floor, corn and soybeans. They, too, have been delivered since the year 2000 using shipping certificates. But, as we'll explore in the future, that doesn't always mean an orderly expiration. Soybean farmers in the state of Illinois experienced that problem firsthand in July of 2007. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Time now for our look at the cash grain market, and we're joined on this Wednesday afternoon by Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Hi, Kay.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Now, what do your wheat producers in that area think of the big drop in the marketplace today?
Well, not only did the board drop today, but so did the basis as well. New crop values are just getting weaker and weaker. We know we're going to plant a lot more acreage. Seed is hard to find. So I've had, probably since the market's closed, I've had three or four people call and ask what our new crop wheat bid was. So no doubt they don't like the drop in the wheat, but that's just kind of the way it goes.
Are they willing to take some coverage at this point and put some sales on the books?
No. I mean, just today, there's no interest. They want to wait and see. Well, you know, we had so many limit-up days, I think they just feel like, and there's no doubt the volatility is going to be there because we've got a low carry-out, and there's reason to be bullish wheat. But yet, on the other hand, these bids next year are a little on the scary side.
Yeah, you think they're scary? You think they ought to be putting some sales on the books?
Yeah, I think anything over $5 should be at least considered because, I mean, if all this acreage comes to fruition and we have a huge crop, then you're going to see the same thing happen in corn, you know. I mean, it's a lot of it's emotion, and so, yeah, it wouldn't hurt to do a little bit here, I don't think.
You're taking both corn and soybeans into the elevator today?
Not a lot of beans. They're still in corn on the sand ground, and, you know, moisture's anywhere from 16. We had one load in here, 21, but here again, I'm just hearing some fantastic yields out here, anywhere from 160 on poor sand ground. And one gentleman this morning told me he had 240 off of a field close to his house, but it's good ground. So no doubt we have a big corn crop.
A big crop in your area. What would a normal yield be like in any given year?
Well, I'd say maybe probably 100, and between 140 and 150 would be normal. But, you know, we're here in 150 to 160 on sand ground, so there's no doubt we're going to surpass that.
And what kind of basis do you have going to the southeast now?
We have gone to all fall values on corn and beans both, and since you and I talked last Wednesday, train values are about 8 cents weaker than they were last week. So we're getting this harvest underway, and basis levels are pretty cheap. But I think the sooner we can get this cheap basis out of the way, the faster they'll bounce back.
Are cars hard to get at this point?
So far, no. No, we haven't had any trouble. We loaded a train over the weekend, but the worst hasn't been seen yet. I think eventually it will get pretty tough to get trains.
And what are your bids for the day?
Cash corn today is $3.14, cash beans $8.68, and new crop wheat is $5.12.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Todd.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Wednesday afternoons. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. He'll help us take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. Just a reminder, if you'd like to hear the weather forecast, the futures analysis, or the cash grain segment, you can always do that again later this evening or this afternoon. It'll be posted shortly to willag.org. That's willag.org. Our ag programming home on the internet. We hope you drop by there and subscribe for our weekend newsletter. It's absolutely free. Your regional newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A University of Illinois professor says a legal challenge to Illinois' school funding system could be pulled off, but other experts wonder if the replacement would be any better than the current system. Politicians and academics discuss the future of public school funding this afternoon. Law professor Lori Reynolds believes the current system that relies heavily on local property taxes could violate the state constitution's mandate for uniform taxation. But economics professor Fred Gertz says a statewide property tax levy or other attempts to set a statewide adequate funding level could create a situation similar to California, where education funding has dropped to very low levels. Transit officials are considering a plan from Governor Blagojevich to give the Chicago Transit Authority short-term funding to stave off service cuts and fare increases that are set to begin Sunday. Details of the proposal aren't being released yet. CTA Chairwoman Carol Brown says it would require a legal review and approval from the Regional Transit Authority. Brown says the legal review is necessary because the agency isn't sure it can use the proposed money. Representatives from the governor's office met with Brown and Regional Transportation Authority Chairman Jim Riley this morning. A plan to prop up the Chicago area's struggling mass transit system failed in the Illinois House last week. Without more cash, the CTA says it'll have to suspend 39 bus routes and raise fares by up to a dollar. Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama says the best way to protect national security and pressure Iraq's leaders to end their civil war is to start pulling U.S. troops out now. In excerpts of a speech the Illinois senator is giving today in Iowa, he says the troop withdrawal should start immediately, adding not in 6 months or a year, but now. Obama's strong opposition to the war is a central theme of his campaign, one that he's using to try to distinguish himself from leading rival Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton. But she, too, is urging quick action to bring troops home. She's written a letter to President Bush urging him to speed up the timetable for withdrawing forces. Crews plan to remove and preserve dozens of hand-cut timbers that once supported a stone culvert as part of the 19th-century Wabash and Erie Canal near Terre Haute. Workers found the timbers while trying to sink support pilings for a bridge that'll be part of a bypass southeast of the city. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner. He's the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about harvest weather, please.
Well, it looks pretty good for the next week. I think we'll see an infrequent occurrence of shower and thunderstorm activity across the majority of the Midwest and the plains, favoring field activities of all kinds. We should end up seeing a pretty good shot of coolness, though, coming to the south from Canada on Friday and Saturday mornings of this week. Still looking at frost and freezes across a large part of Montana and North Dakota. I know that's a long way removed from the Midwest, but there will be some frost that will work its way into the northwestern Corn Belt on Saturday morning. This will include Minnesota, parts of Wisconsin and Iowa, and even Nebraska will get involved both Friday and Saturday mornings. We do not expect to see a killing frost or freeze occur across those northwestern Corn Belt areas, with the exception of a few areas in Minnesota and Wisconsin, where we will see temperatures of 28 to 32 degrees. And, of course, most of North Dakota and areas further west in Montana will see hard freezes most definitely. This event will likely lose all of its intensity as it gets further east across the Midwest for Sunday, and we will have to wait until the last week of this month before we see another opportunity for killing frost or freeze in the western portions of the region. In the meantime, the second week of the two-week forecast is advertised to see an increase in precipitation across the Midwest. We'll have a temporary southwesterly flow pattern developing aloft, which will generate showers and thunderstorms across hard red wheat country as well as the Corn Belt. As we go into the middle and latter part of next week and continuing into the second weekend of the two-week outlook, don't get too upset about it. I don't think we're going to see a lot of precipitation there quantity-wise, but the frequency in the western Corn Belt will be a little bit higher than desired by many, and we will need some drier weather. But once that cold surge comes through at the end of the month, we'll see another period of drier weather again.
We've been talking about the USDA's release of the crop production report this morning. It basically says South America needs to put a lot of beans in the ground. Are they going to get that opportunity over the coming month?
Well, I think they'll have the opportunity to put the crop in the ground. There's no doubt about that. There will be some concern about some dryness early on in northern production areas, and then later in the season there'll be some concern about dryness in southern production areas. And I think it's that southern dryness in the latter part of spring and early summer that will raise a considerable amount of debate about how well the Brazilian crop will be able to produce this year. It's a long way down the road right now, but we are expecting to see La Nina have a little more influence on world weather patterns as we go through their spring season. And I think that's one of the main reasons why the potential exists for some dryness in southern production areas. But, of course, Mato Grosso is the number one producer in Brazil, and it may start off a little on the dry side, but it should end up with timely rains during the heart of the production season.
I'm sure Governor Maggi will be very glad to hear that.
All right. Thanks much, Drew. We appreciate you being with us today.
All right. You have a good day.
You too. All Drew right, Lerner bye. Is a senior agricultural meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated. He's in Kansas City. Governor Maggi, of course, one of the largest soybean producers in the world, not in his size, but in the number of acres he puts in the ground. That is today's closing market report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the markets. And don't forget, you can listen to today's futures analysis, the cash grain report, and the weather right there on our website, the address, willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.